Howdy all, this is Shane. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. Today I'll be flying solo, and I also wanted to chat about a few of the different things when it comes to running a band, either social networking, websites, Reverb Nation, and also dynamics and personalities within bands, because that's one thing a lot of people don't expect when they start a band, is that the hardest part to manage is the people. So we're going to start today with looking at Reverb Nation, because I have a few problems with the service, and I actually had a chat to a few of my friends off camera about Reverb Nation and my thoughts about it. And I find, like, these kind of sites, they're aimed to help you as a musician, and I put that in quotation marks, but really they're to help themselves, which is fair enough in some ways, but at the same time, it's a really frustrating service. I find the way their ranking system works is completely flawed, and not only that, I don't think it helps you in any way other than giving your ego a bit of a boost if you do go up the rankings. If you've actually had some success with Reverb Nation and you've gone to get gigs and people have asked for your profile, please let me know. So far, no one that I know has actually used Reverb Nation for anything productive other than to boost their rankings locally, which, does it convert to any sales? No, I absolutely don't think so. If you're not a web savvy sort of person and you're not familiar with how to maybe run a player on a website, like an audio player, then yeah, you get a free web player, but you also get spammed. Anytime you log in, it's trying to upsell you stuff or sell you anything, all their services. Every click you make, it's trying to push their crap onto you. And it's always like one spot left in your region. All of that's garbage. And by buying that, it's not going to help you at all. Basically, let's start with the ranking system on here, because I think that's where most people are misled. You're not based on musicality or even, you know, how popular your profile is. It also ranks you according to how often you use the service Reverb Nation. So if you're logging in and you add a gig to the profile, then basically that's it. You go up in the ranking. It's that simple. You can do anything. You can send an email from there or a message or anything like that, and you'll go up the rankings. I went from like 80 to number 4 just by adding 3 or 4 gigs. I think that is absolutely ridiculous. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm under the top 100 again. I don't think having that as motivation is any good. Like, being in the top 10 didn't help me at all. I even made mention of it on a few venues when I tried to get gigs, and they just said, bring a CD in. So that's what I did. So I would save a lot of the time spent messing around with these type of networks and set up one really good website and maybe a Facebook page, because most of the hardcore fans will know where to find you online. And the more you spread yourself online into all these different networks, the harder it is for people to actually find the relevant information. So get rid of everything you don't need and stick with something that's really easy and really straightforward. If you have a .com or a .net or whatever, then simply update that continuously. Put all your effort into your own stuff rather than relying on another person's, you know, social network. All I see with Reverb Nation is people going up and down these rankings. And if you've paid for a service on Reverb Nation other than selling your songs, which is therefore giving money to Reverb Nation, let me know. For me, I host all my own stuff now. I am pretty tech-savvy kind of guy, so I'm lucky like that. I've worked in IT for years. But that said, I've also found that a lot of these guys that are just putting their efforts into Reverb Nation aren't getting anything back, other than some boasting rights if you're in the top, you know, top 10. So if you want to be in the top 10, simply crank up, just put in a whole lot of fake gig dates and you're done. You'll get there, no problems. All right, so let's now have a chat about running a band and what I felt and experienced over the last sort of 7 or 8 or 9 years, I guess now, playing live with different reincarnations of my originals and blues band. And I've got to say, the first thing that I need to put out there is you need your A-team present as much as possible. And what I mean by that is the core band that know your material, that might have helped to work on your material, they're the guys that will bring the best out in any situation when you play live. You're at the most comfortable when you know everybody knows their stuff. As soon as you change either a drummer or a bass player because someone's sick or they can't do the gig or they're double booked, which is what happens a lot these days, then you get someone else in. Generally, these guys aren't as good as your A-team players in terms of they might not gel as well with the other musicians, or they might not listen as well, or they might not just be as good. And I've experienced that for years. Like, we've always had guys that filled in with the band that might be great musically, but they don't learn the stuff properly, or they don't have the self-confidence, or they don't have the ability to listen as well as the other guys. So it's one of those things, running a band can get really frustrating. And not only do you chase all the gigs, you do all the marketing, you do the audio engineering and mixing for the albums and all that kind of stuff, you do all the online work and buy the .coms and do all the posters and all that kind of stuff, you're also trying to organize everybody in the band. So anytime a gig comes in, you have to call everybody, see if they're free, and if they're not, you then have to chase around the B and the C team, and then you have to justify to yourself, is it worth it? I've actually come to the realization that working with guys that are either not competent enough or never learn the stuff properly, or I don't trust them musically, I won't work with them anymore. And these are the kind of guys that end up bringing the gig down for the rest of you. And then you compromise your gig. So what I mean by that is you'll have all your songs. The A team will know everything. They're comfortable. They'll play it out. You don't have to look around and sort of think, oh, what the hell's going on here? You know, so there, the B team generally will know, say 70% of the songs, but mostly the stuff that makes the band stand out, they won't know, and they don't play it as well. And everyone brings their own feel, that's one thing, but to be able to play in a way that is still tidy and all that kind of stuff, it's hard to find. I was lucky, I had a couple of backup players that were really, really good. One in particular was great. You could give him a CD, he'd learn everything off it properly, and you wouldn't have to think twice about it. It was like he's played with you for years. And even though I played with him for years before that as well, he's one of those kind of guys that walks in and just nails it. He's an absolute pro. And that also comes down from him being, you know, in the music industry for so long and playing with countless different styles of bands all around Australia. So, yeah, with the exception of a few of these guys, I started to feel like the overall core idea of what I was trying to do was starting to suffer. So basically now what I've done is I'm just cancelling gigs where I can't get the core A team of my band now. So what I'd like to see is if anyone else has been through this, where you get other people in to play that don't necessarily ever learn their parts properly, so you have to sort of dumb the gig down a little bit by playing simpler stuff or the same stuff with these guys because they just don't listen or they just don't get it. So this is half the reason why now I'm extremely frustrated playing and trying to organize a band. And it's not only that, it's also a combination of things, including the venues that double book you, or they put you down and then they cancel all the Friday gigs or the Saturday gigs or something like that. So for me now, it's just about getting a gig locked in. And if I can't use the two or three guys in my band that I want to play with, I won't do it. Or I'll just do it as a three-piece. I find the three-piece has really helped me get my chops back up. And it just doesn't turn into an epic guitar wank like it used to. So as fun as that was, it's not what I want to be doing long-term now. So, yeah, let me know what you think of all of that. And, yeah, I think the A-team is extremely important. And just playing a gig because you can get a fill-in doesn't mean the gig's going to be either as fulfilling as it could be or as good as it could be. And also, I should note, I always had two rhythm sections. I always had a different drummer and a different bass player lined up if one guy couldn't do it. But even then, it still becomes compromised, and it's not something that I want to pursue anymore. If I can't do it right, I'm not going to do it at all. And yeah, whether that means I'm playing less or what, it's one of those things now. I love playing live, but I hate organizing people. So my theory is now, why do a second-rate gig when you can get better musicians that will do it justice on another night? So if it's possible now, what I try to do is just book on a different day where I can get these guys. And the lineup may change slightly from time to time still, but generally I'm just not going to book if I can't get guys that at least push me musically. So a little bit about my videos and what's been going on. As you can see from my YouTube channel, I've absolutely tried to step out of the regular type of videos. I've started putting together top 10s and obviously this podcast as well. And I've been pleasantly surprised how popular not only the podcast is already, but how popular the top 10 videos are. These are like top 10, you know, worst things to do at a jam night. They're like 2 minutes long, or give or take. And yeah, I'm just put together a whole lot of funny and, well, hopefully funny clips. And yeah, one of those, the first one that I did at about the blues jam was the most popular video in 24 hours I've ever put up. I think it had like 2,000 views in a few hours, so that was pretty funny. I'm also going to be writing a few more of those coming up, and yeah, I'll just try to keep them going. They don't always just pop into my head, but if there's something that I want to talk about or I think is funny enough, then, and I can relate to it, and I'm assuming that other people can relate to it, I'll just keep them coming as well. It's good fun for me to mix up the videos, which is kind of why I started doing the podcast as well, because I felt like, you know, gear demo after gear demo and overdrive pedal and distortion pedal after another, and yeah, some people were saying, man, they kind of all sound the same after a while, and well, you know, they don't. But if you're bombarded with like 27 overdrive pedals in a month, I totally get that. So I'm going to start spacing out my videos a little more and hopefully planning their, you know, their timing online, so you don't feel like you're getting too much of the same stuff or too much of the same thing all at once. So it may require a little bit more planning on my side, but I think it'll be a good thing. So the comedy ones might come out on a Wednesday or a Friday or a Monday or something, you know, maybe to replace the old Mustang Monday. I still don't have any plans for more Mustang Monday videos. I feel like I've kind of, you know, gone past that a little bit now in terms of, you know, wanting to go backwards and just rehash over old ground. So I don't plan to do any more of those. If a new Mustang amp comes out, I'll buy it and I'll start doing some more. Like if they release a Mustang 3 version 3 or whatever, I'll buy another one and we'll keep it going. But up until that point, I don't think I'm going to do any more. So yeah, there's plenty of great patches already on that Fender Fuse website, mine as well as many others. So you'll be able to find something that you like that you can easily tweak. And yeah, they're still great amp. I got mine sitting right on the floor. It holds my pedals most of the time when I'm filming. And yeah, it's absolutely rocking. So again, thanks to everybody who supports all the videos that I put up. I really appreciate it. And if you still have any other comments and you're watching this on YouTube or wherever you are or wherever you're listening to this, feel free to email me and just or message me or whatever you like and give me some suggestions for what you'd like to see on the channel. I'm always open to that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'd love to see that. Back on the first podcast, I spoke about how little I think tubes change the tone of your amplifier if you already have good tubes in there. Look, if they're old, yeah, change them out. And if you want a different preamp tube, seriously, go ahead and do that. It's fine. But if you've already got good tubes and you want to replace them with another set of good tubes, there might not be a huge difference in them. I still think the biggest difference comes from swapping the speaker out. And a lot of people don't think that way around. A speaker makes a massive difference. I've recently just put a new speaker in my Fender Blues Deluxe reissue amplifier, which has absolutely transformed that amp. It took away the sort of sizzle high end that it had. It was sort of a little shitty sounding on the highs. It was a little bit spiky and a little bit sort of just not very nice. And it's given it lots more lows and a better mids, or maybe not lots more lows. What I should say is it has a nicer low end now. It's a tighter low, so I can actually run the bass up a little higher, but the mids is where I notice it the most. It's got this really nice, thick, smooth, low mids that I love in an amp, really will make it stick out in a mix. Kind of like how the Turok amps have that really fat sound. So I put an Eminence Swamp Thang speaker in there. I'm going to say Swamp Thing because I sound stupid trying to say Thang. So yeah, I put that in and I'm so far so good. I'm yet to try it live. I'm just been using it at home. And so far it's night and day over the old speaker. And the reason I chose this one is because It has a really high decibel rating or high volume rating, so it's louder at the same volume than my old one was. After also comparing them with my friend Brian's Fender Eminent, Eminent speakers that he had the Red Wizard and the Red, White and Blues and all that kind of stuff, it was a no-brainer that the stock speaker was nowhere near as nice in every department, whether it was the highs, the lows, anything. It didn't have any of the niceness that these third-party speakers had. And it's a really, really amazing thing that Fender still put that stock speaker in their amps. I mean, the first thing most people do, and I have had two Blues Deluxe amps. First thing I did in my old one was change it out to a Lowrance, and the Lowrance speaker still to this day sounds amazing. My friend has put one in his Yorkville Trainor amp, and it totally transformed that. And he didn't have to do anything else other than change the speaker for the amp to sound 10 times better. And that's how I feel about these Swamp Thing speakers, is they still retain that niceness of the Fender sound, but you're getting so much more. And the amp just sounds full and fat, and it's such a great template for, you know, for playing live or recording. It's going to sound fantastic. So, yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. I'm thinking about even selling my Deluxe Reverb, the 68 one as well, because I'm starting to feel like the more stuff I have, the harder it is to always remember. Well, not always remember, but I think if you've got one good amp, or, you know, and I'm going to keep the Mustang, but if you've got one good amp that you play live, the more you use it, the more you come to realize, like, how to set it up and how to make it sound good in any situation. And this is one of those times where, you know, I don't really need three amps anymore. The 68 Custom Deluxe has been the amp that I've been using on a lot of the gear demos, but to be honest, the Blues Deluxe sounds fantastic, especially into the isolation cabinet. So, yeah, for me, I'm just going to stick to one amp for a while and see how I go. You know, odds are I'll probably end up getting something else down the track, but if I do, it may actually be like a Supersonic 22 or a Supersonic 60 again, because Supersonic 60 was still one of the nicest amps I've ever had, and that had a vintage 30 in there, which to my ear, on soloed sound, wasn't the nicest sound in the world, but in a mix they sound really, really fat. So, you know, I may end up looking at something like that again long term. Now I'm stronger again and haven't got a sore back. So, yeah, point of the video, or this one is at least, or this segment, is speakers still make a huge difference, and I would urge you to try that before you go replacing tubes or valves, unless of course they're faulty, then it's a no-brainer. But yeah, definitely check out some of the speakers online. And yeah, I should probably point out, I was going to buy another WGS speaker, and they're nice and smooth and nice and round sounding speakers, and I've had a ET65 before, and it was super smooth. If you're looking for that two rock sound, they absolutely do that. But what they also miss to my ear now, after a bit more experience, is they're maybe not as loud as the Eminent speakers, and they also don't have the sort of outward push of the mids. They're more of a scooped, squishy kind of mids, which sounds great. It would record great, and it would also sound great stacked with another speaker. But on its own, in a single 12 box, I don't know how an ET65 would do me anymore after hearing some of these Patriot series and, yeah, Eminent speakers. They absolutely sound great. So check them out. I don't sell them. I'm not endorsed by them. I'm not sponsored by them or anything. So you're just getting my opinion. And yeah, I think they sound great. So wait till I get a live clip up, because it's absolutely going to rock. Right, let's take a look now at my top five rhythm guitar pedals. And this is sometimes overlooked for more of your lead tone stuff, but these are the pedals that will give you that beautiful off clean tone. It's perfect for stacking, all that kind of stuff. And as always, I don't care how much these things cost or whether they're cheap, expensive, it absolutely doesn't matter. These are pedals that I feel are some of the best on the market for what they do. And it was really hard to narrow this list down, but I think I've got it nailed right now, unless I totally forget something, and then I'll go back and amend it. But I'm also going to be doing this as a video demo at some point, where I'll play all these pedals back to back and show you how they sound as rhythm pedals only and how they sound stacked with another pedal. So let's go ahead and give this a go. Number 5 is one of my top 3 pedals of all time, or maybe top 5 now as well. So it's made it in both categories. This is the King Bee Mark II pedal. This is one of those pedals that can do just about everything via a toggle switch. It has a toggle switch on the front, which will go from sort of like that classic overdrive tone to, in the middle, I think, is the dumble tone, and then down on the switch is clean boost. The dumble tone, or the tube screamer tone, sounds absolutely great, and it's one of those pedals that I've used on its own or stacked, and for me, I love the dumble tone. I think it works great with other pedals, and it made number 5 because it's just absolutely killer. So yeah, I absolutely love it. I think it's one of the best I've had a chance to use. So number 4 on my top 5 has to be the Maxon OD808X, which is the red pedal, the overdrive extreme pedal. This is probably one of Maxon's most overlooked pedals for people. I think they think it's going to be really high gain. And what I love about it is it's not mid-humped like the green classic overdrive pedal. So you can get a much nicer rhythm tone, in my opinion. It sort of sounds more amp-like, and you don't get that sort of pushed mid sound, nor do you get the rolled off high end that you get from tube screamers. It doesn't take, you know, it's not a vintage sound. So you're getting a very true, really usable palette to then stack on other pedals. And yeah, the 808X is just one of the best. And like I said, you can stack pedals in front of it or after it, and it will sound absolutely cool. It's a leave on pedal for me. If I'm playing my Blues Deluxe amp or whatever, I'd leave that on and then stack another overdrive or volume boost in front of it. And you're laughing, it sounds unreal. So definitely check them out. They're not over the top expensive. They're built really well. They're made in Japan, like all Maxon stuff. And yeah, it's a great pedal. So definitely look them up. And all right, so number 3 is the Shelly overdrive or OD pedal. Now, I thought this was Chile when I first saw it, but it's actually Shelly. It's a different spelling. So it's C-H-E-L-L-E-E, I think. I could be wrong, but that's just going off the top of my head here. But yeah, it's the Shelly Odie, O-D-I-E overdrive. It has 3 different options, and one of them is just like a flat overdrive tone. It doesn't boost anywhere on the lows or in the mids, and it's a great platform for stacking. They retail for about $100 in the US, not from a shop, but you can buy them directly from the guy that makes them, Peter, in Orange City, Florida. And for $100, they're as good as you're going to get. They really are. They sound awesome. They're durable. Check out his drop test too, because I think they're pretty funny. He drops them from like 80 feet from a drone. It's pretty funny. So number 2 on my top 5 right now, this was really hard to do. Either one of these could be number 1 for me, but I'm going to put this one as number 2. And only because maybe I haven't used it enough, I think, on an AB, which I'll definitely do very soon on YouTube with the number 1 contender. Let's see how that goes. This could change. But either one of these top 5s, or any of these top 5, are fantastic. So number 2 is the VFE Blues King pedal. These pedals in particular are unreal. They sound smooth and nice, and it sounds like the off-clean channel your amp just doesn't have. It absolutely rounds out all the sort of annoying frequencies. If you've got an amp and you don't really like the sound, you click this thing on, and it's going to sound better. It's a low gain overdrive as well, so even with the gain all the way up, you're not going to get high gain. It's perfect for the blues tone or the starting blues tone, depending on what you like. It has some different options on the pedal as well, so you can do a few different things with it. But yeah, definitely check out the VFE Blues Kings. They're unreal, and they look super cool too. All right, so the number 1 is the Emerson Paramount pedal. This is my favorite off-clean pedal right now. Like I said, it could change from time to time. I might go back to the Blues King, or I might go back to the Maxon OD808X. It doesn't really matter. They're all great. But the Paramount does something nice to my Blues Deluxe in particular. It's like the perfect amount of grit. It's also a really cool volume boost pedal too, because it's low gain overdrive. It sort of tightens up the sound on the lows as well as the highs. It rolls out sort of that real ear-piercing sort of high end. So I guess in some ways it's kind of like a vintage high end, where it will taper out a little bit of highs, but the tone control is super responsive. I've seen guys use these on bass guitars. They sound that good. Like if they have their bass sound, they click on the Paramount pedal, it sounds better. It's one of those pedals that sort of re-EQs your sound a little bit, but what it does extremely well, and you can push pedals into it and it sounds even better. So definitely check out the Paramount Drives by Emerson. I think they're one of the best, if not the best, pedal I've ever used for rhythm guitar. So any of these top five, like I said, are really good. Now, it also comes down to personal choice. So you may like one more than another. It doesn't mean I'm right. It doesn't mean you're right. It's all personal choice. So whatever is right for you is the right one. So they're all great, and I'm going to definitely do a shootout between all five of these very soon. I might try and also get a couple of the cheaper pedals, like the Kalin Pure Sky Overdrive, which sounds awesome as well. So we'll go through some of those as well. But yeah, that's definitely my top five from 2014. It's been a really cool year being able to test all of these pedals out. And from my live experience and what I hear in the recording situation at home when I do the videos, that's definitely my top five. So just a little bit of information for everybody listening. The In the Blues Tone podcast, as well as my videos, have been somewhat sponsored now by Rode Microphones, which is really cool. I own about 9 Rode microphones. The little one you see on my shirt in the videos is a Rode mic. The one on the podcast is Rode NT2A. I also have 2 Rode NTG microphones I use for my video cameras and the documentaries. They're overhead mics, but I kind of mount them on my camera most of the time. I have 2 Rode M3 microphones and 2 Rode NT3 microphones, and I've had quite a few of their others. They're going to be supplying me with a really sweet condenser mic I'll be able to mic up my amps with, and it should be a lot of fun. I may actually use it on the podcast as well, just to break it up and, you know, you can see how it sounds. It's the Rode NT1A, I think it's called. So it should be a lot of fun. And yeah, huge shout out to Rode Microphones for sponsoring the In the Blues Tone podcast and the videos to come for the next few months. It's going to be awesome. So yeah, basically this is just a great way for me to try their products, to show people what they sound like, and sort of feature them on the channel. This isn't like a money exchanging hands kind of deal or anything like that either. All it is they're nice enough to send me a mic. I'm going to use it and, you know, obviously say that I'm using it. But if you're watching the podcast, you could probably see that I've been a huge supporter of Rode now for years. And all the videos I did at Jerry's in Sarasota recently were mic'd up with a Rode M3 microphone, which is still my favorite to record electric guitar with. I really like that one, and it's mounted inside my ISO cabinet right now. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and it's always good to try different microphones, because you can get some results sometimes that totally blow you away. And I think it's one of those things, unless you try it, you don't really know. So that's about it for today. Thank you to everybody who's been listening through iTunes or at guitarpedaldemos.com. If you want to contact me, you can reach me at facebook.com/intheblues, much like my channel name on YouTube at youtube.com/intheblues as well. I also have the Tone Shop at intheblues.com.au. There's a contact form on there as well that you can reach me at, and that will go through to my email account. And if you have any questions, feel free to do so. If you want to be on the Tone podcast at some point in time and you want me to maybe interview you, or we can have a chat, let's organize some of that as well. It might be really cool to get you on and discuss a topic that I haven't covered yet. That might be awesome, so feel free to do that. So thanks to everybody who supported the channel, and I also want to say the channel's just grown so much over the last 12 months. It's almost doubled in size, and yeah, I'm getting, you know, 715,000 views a month now, which is absolutely insane. It's now the number one most viewed gear channel in Australia, which is a good milestone, because, you know, I was always behind a couple of people, but now I'm like miles in front of them, and also in front of all of the shops in Australia. So it's interesting to see that a guy working from his house doing this, you know, part-time while I was working full-time for many, many years can do that. And I owe everybody a huge thanks for being a part of that over the last, you know, 12 months and earlier as well. So everybody who's supported me for a long, long time, I greatly appreciate that. So thanks for listening. And like I said, I'm always open to discussion and you know, if you want to see something that I haven't done or whatever, please let me know. Great news is I've got, I think, 10 pedals or so coming in pretty soon from a company that's just started out. And this should be pretty sweet. The guy who makes these pedals is the guy that used to basically design the Joyo pedals. So they're very different and they look amazing as well. So I can't wait to get these sent over. And yeah, I'll be doing demos of these guys pretty soon. Yeah, awesome stuff to come next year. I don't know if I'll get them this year as it's getting close to the end of the year now, but yeah. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. And please subscribe if you haven't already at youtube.com/inTheBlues. And thanks for listening to the podcast. See you later.